The storm over the firing of 8 U.S. attorneys continues to swirl in Washington. On Thursday, senators grilled former Justice Department operative D. Kyle Sampson, who said that his boss, Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez, did have a direct hand in the dismissals. Gonzalez had earlier claimed he wasn't personally involved, and on that point, the paper trail didn't contradict him, because in all the thousands of pages of emails released by the White House so far, there's not one email from the Attorney General himself. Apparently, he doesn't use email. And he's not the only cabinet official. Donald Rumsfeld claimed not to use it, ditto for Condoleezza Rice and Michael Chertoff. In fact, the president himself told CNBC last year that he didn't touch the stuff.
I tend not to email. Well, not only tend not to email, I don't email because of the different record requests that could happen to a president. I don't want to receive emails because, you know, there's no telling what somebody to email me and then it would show up as a, you know, part of some kind of a story that, and I would be able to say, well, I didn't read the email, but I sent it to your address. I can say you didn't. So in other words, I'm very cautious about emailing.
In the wake of the prosecutor purge, some are questioning whether Bush and his staffers are really steering clear of email altogether or just their official White House accounts. Recently released documents show that one aide to Karl Rove helped orchestrate the firings using an account registered to the Republican National Committee. And Rove himself reportedly uses his RNC account for about 95% of his emailing. The watchdog group Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington doesn't like the looks of that one bit and has asked Congress to investigate. I'm joined now by the group's top watchdog, Melanie Sloan. Melanie, welcome to On the Media.
Thank you.
So let's just say White House staffers are routinely using outside accounts. Is there any legal responsibility to use their government-issued email accounts?
There is, in fact. There's something called the Presidential Records Act that requires individuals who are employed in the White House by the Executive Office of the President to maintain all communications, all email correspondence. And if you are not using a White House account, which has an automatic backup system, then you are, in fact, in violation of the Presidential Records Act.
But my understanding of the law was that there is no explicit mandate to use only White House email accounts for official communication?
Well, that's an interesting question. We sent a letter over to the Office of Administration in the Executive Office of the President to ask about their policies. There was, in fact, a very explicit policy in the Clinton administration specifically prohibiting staff from using commercial email systems.
Irrespective of whether it's actually illegal, can we assume that this is being done in order to evade the requirement?
We can be sure that it's being done to evade the requirement because we've seen emails that so indicate. There was some correspondence with Jack Abramoff back in 2003 where he said he had accidentally sent an email to Susan Ralston, who was a former assistant to Karl Rove, on her White House account, and that was a mistake. They didn't want to end up with emails being preserved. Even today, I read something where a bunch of White House staff have expressed concern that it's coming out that they were using RNC email accounts. So a couple have gone out and gotten their own BlackBerries with private email accounts, as if somehow that's the solution. That's just another way that they're evading the law, again, which requires all emails from White House staffers to be maintained.
Melanie Sloan is Executive Director of the Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington. The White House didn't return our calls for comment on this matter of executive record keeping, but Anna Nelson did. She's a presidential historian at American University. Back in the 70s, she worked on a governmental commission that helped draft the Presidential Records Act, invoked by Melanie Sloan in connection with the White House email. Nelson says that before Richard Nixon, presidents and their heirs had willingly donated their papers to the National Archives, eventually. But when Watergate happened, Congress had to intervene to keep the president from destroying his records.
He was about to throw his tapes in the Potomac. Then suddenly it occurred to people that while presidents had been so good about giving their papers, they didn't have to. They could give whatever they wanted. There was no view that the papers that they owned were public papers. And it was out of that that the Congress put together the Presidential Records Act,
which I guess had two basic provisions. One, that records from the White House were to be protected and not destroyed, and that they be released within a reasonable amount of time of a president leaving office. The period of time specified was 12 years. Why 12 years?
I think it was an arbitrary number. You can look at it from the standpoint that three elections down the road, they'll open the papers of a past president.
Well, this gets to Presidential Executive Order 13233, signed by President Bush in 2001. Tell me what the order says and what it has hindered journalists and historians from doing.
This order has a couple of provisions. One is that whereas the Presidential Records Act deliberately did not allow heirs or family members of any kind or executors to decide in the future what was going to be released, this provision on the Bush Act does allow, in perpetuity, actually, there's no restriction, for the president's heirs or executors to determine whether or not things can be opened or not. The second thing is that there is no deadline for the current president to actually decide on whether a paper can be released. So as far as journalists are concerned, your story is long going to be over before you see any papers under this executive order.
So is it fair to say that President Bush, by executive fiat, negated the Records Act and sent us back to the pre-1978 ways of doing business?
He sent us back in access. Of course, the papers are still government-owned papers. He didn't deny that, so that the government can still protect them. When we get to see them is the issue.
The House of Representatives 2 weeks ago approved a measure that would, in fact, overturn President Bush's executive order. Assuming the Senate does the same and this results in a bill being placed on the president's desk, do you expect him to sign that bill into law?
I think he'll work very hard to keep the Senate from passing it. I think if it's passed, that he may veto it. But it would not be a very smart politically because, I mean, how are you going to explain to the American people that you don't want to open records, that you don't want to tell them what you did, or you don't want to tell them what your father did, or you want all the presidents who follow you not to be able to tell us what goes on? That's going to be tough to explain. It's more involved than that, but you know that's the way it's going to come out.
Anna, thank you so much for joining us.
You're welcome.
Anna Nelson is the Distinguished Historian in Residence at American University in Washington, D.C.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.